Welcome back to another episode of the Hunting Game Podcast, where we talk about hunting, fishing, faith, and the great outdoors. It's your host, Levi Coons. Get ready for another exciting episode, because here we go. What's up, what's up, what's up? We are back for another exciting episode of the Hunting Game Podcast. We are getting near and close to deer season opener here in the great state of Indiana, as I like to call God's country. But we do have a special guest today coming at us from the state of Florida. A guy you've heard me talk about multiple times. I've definitely brought his name up because this is the guy that calls me every time the podcast is 3 minutes late from uploading. He doesn't miss a beat. So, and also one of my big motivators to start the show back up after our little break. So, Gator, as we like to call him, or Mason, what's up, buddy?
Oh, nothing much, man. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Man, we're excited to have you. So, I hear you said just a minute ago you're getting real close to that Florida opener.
Absolutely. It's as of right now, it's we're within 48 hours. She opens up September 17th, and it's time to start letting arrows fly.
It's probably like, what, still 230 degrees out down there?
Oh, it's not quite there. It's, you know, high 70s, low 80s at night, you know, mid to low 90s in the middle of the day.
Phew.
But, you know, I hunt, my state's actually broken down into four different zones. And there's different seasons that correlate with each zone. And I'm in zone C. So a little bit north Florida, so it should be, you know, mid 70s, right at daylight. So still a little comfortable.
I got you. So we're looking at, which last weekend we got a little taste of it. We had 2 days, Monday and Tuesday were a high of 68.
Ooh,
so yeah,
high of 68.
Yeah, high of 68. We had about
that's sweater weather
51 in the morning. If you were still in town, you'd have a coat on.
You know, it breaks
Carhartts
out.
Carhartts are on. But anyways, we're back about 86 this week, so yeah. It's back up. We're pretty even, I guess. We're not hitting that 90 mark, but we're not too far off of you.
Don't worry, you don't want to hit that 90 mark.
No. What's the humidity like down there?
Oh, awful. it's raining almost every day, and unfortunately it's raining real hard for about 30 minutes, and then the sun comes right back out and the humidity just, you know, it's that sticky weather where you try and stay in the AC as long as possible.
Yeah. So you're not forecasting any all day hunts right off the bat.
No. And you know, I would love to do it. Our rut here is actually starting to kick off. You know, I'm already starting to notice, you know, those bachelor groups of bucks have broken up, and I'm starting to see black tarsal glands on some of my mature bucks. Does are starting to kick their fawns from last year out, and you know, it's getting that time. And usually about second to third week of season is our peak rut here.
Wow, that's wild. You know, I know it was a big change when you came up here to Indiana for what were you up here 4 years?
Five. Took a victory lap.
Oh yeah, that's right. But anyways, I remember one of the first times we were out, I think we went down and cruised to Atterbury and you saw a doe, and I remember you about came out of your seat. You said, "What the heck was that?" I said, "It's a doe." You said, "That was a freaking horse." Said, "No, that's no normal sized doe." You're like, "Oh, I'm going to like this."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they, you know, it seems like the further north you go, the bigger the deer get. And the further south you go, our bodies, they tend to shrink.
Now,
a good doe for us is 100, 110 pounds maybe. And I mean, if she crosses 115, you drag her around town.
What are your bucks like down there?
Buck-wise, a good one, probably 160 is a, 160, 165 pounds is a big body buck for us. Horn wise, if people would let them live a little bit longer, we could, we could really grow some good horn deer, 130, 140 class deer. But horn wise, a lot of our deer are kind of small basket rack bucks, just because of a 3.5 year old deer in this state isn't, that's an old deer in this state. It just seems like every one of them gets shot.
Well, I feel like there's a lot that goes into it down there. I mean, just the climate itself. Plus, we all know there's some people get a little crazy down there in that good old state. So I'm sure, I think that the common misconception is everybody thinks Florida, they think of the beach. And
right.
I mean, I never really, growing up, I never really even had any thoughts of whitetail hunting in Florida. Now, I know when it comes to bass fishing, which we'll touch on that in a little while, but I know when it comes to bass fishing, you guys got it going on. You set the bar for bass fishing.
That we do.
Probably fishing in general, but, and I know you do some hog hunting, down there often. So, but, like you said, I think it comes down to a lot of it's, the hunters down there, which, like I said, it's probably a whole different element. So, I know you hunted up here in Indiana. What would you say are some of the main differences hunting in Florida for whitetail?
So some of the main differences that I've seen is, a huge one is the absence of dog hunters. We have folks down here, and don't get me wrong, my dad grew up running dogs. I've run dogs before for both deer and hogs. I enjoy it. To me, there's not a more beautiful sound than, letting a pack of hounds loose first light and they light up. But there's a huge push of dog hunters, especially the further north in the state you go. So those deer are pressured a lot by that. And then people don't think about it, but our predators. Yes, Indiana has a lot of coyotes, but we have coyotes, we have panthers, we have black bears. We've got a good, healthy population of bobcats in the state. So there's a lot of predators chasing these deer around. That and the heat.
And like you said, with the hogs, you've got a lot of competition for your resources down there, because I know the woods are dense from what I can see. I mean, do you have kudzu? I mean, I'm assuming you have kudzu around your property.
Yes. So, I actually hunt just on the edge of a big kudzu patch, which I do and I don't like. I don't like it because, it's an invasive plant to my home state, but on the other hand, it's great bedding habitat for some of my whitetails, where, a lot of what people are hunting here, you're hunting really two types of land in the state. You're hunting swamps and marsh bottoms that are surrounded by oak hammocks, or you're hunting planted pines with oak hammocks around them. And that kudzu really gives good bedding habitat for those deer, especially in the summertime, with easy access to natural foliage and natural browse.
Do deer eat kudzu?
I have personally watched them sit there and eat kudzu.
Interesting.
Yes. and whether they're nibbling on the fresh shoots or what whatever they're doing, they eat the kudzu.
It's so crazy to me, I hear about it, but like you say, like the hunting is so different down there. Just that whole aspect of, really, like you said, there's really swamps and there's two kinds. I mean, we've got so much variety up here and we don't really have swamps, but like I said, what would you say compared to Indiana? I mean, now I'm not including like corn and such like that, but what would you say your nutrient availability is down there compared to here?
It's pretty low. A lot of what these deer are feeding on is either acorns or corn that we put out. State of Florida allows baiting, So, you know, we can do everything from feeders to mineral blocks to man-made food plots. And we are fortunate enough to be able to hunt over top of those. And I know that was one big argument that I got in with a lot of people. When I went to Indiana, I was like, no baiting. What?
Yeah, I remember you saying that. You're like, what?
I can't put corn out. And, you know, I've gone back and forth on it, whether it's cheating or not, but I can't tell you how many hunts I've had where I've sat over top of feeders and never even seen a deer or a raccoon or a squirrel.
Well, here's my take on it too.
It just gives an additional food source for those animals.
Right. And you're in a state where it's legal. So if you don't do it, you're at a disadvantage.
Absolutely.
And that's where people's argument, and I argue, I mean, I used to joke with you all the time when you'd send me pictures of you cheating and stuff, but yeah, if you were hunting over a bait pile in Indiana where it's not legal, you definitely would be cheating and have an advantage. Whereas
100%,
you know, down there, it's just a different, it's just another added element to your fair mm-hmm. chase. You know, your deer are still eligible for Boone and Crockett and Pope and Young. I mean, am I right?
Correct.
Yeah. So
yeah, 100%. They're free range whitetail.
Right. So I think when you put it in that perspective of comparing state to state, yeah, it's, you know, we see it as cheating, but you're playing an even playing field down there.
Right. And I can give you a perfect example where, you know, adding a feeder to a stand location hurt. I had a specific stand, was running a camera in there, and was carrying corn in there 50 pounds at a time. And I would do that once every 2 weeks and was getting great pictures. I had a bachelor group of 6 different bucks, three of which were good 8 points, had a good family of does coming in there. And I said, okay, this is a spot, and hung a stand, put a feeder in there about a month before deer season started, and never got another picture of a deer.
Really?
Never got another picture of a deer. And what I came to determine was it was so close to their bedding area that I added that feeder, and they went, okay, we're just not going to go to this particular, you know, 100 yard circle anymore, because 200 yards away from it, I was getting pictures of deer. But that specific spot where I had put a feeder, it destroyed that spot. I never got another picture of a deer.
You know, a couple years ago, I tested out, you know, we can feed corn in the summertime here. You just have to have it out by a certain time. And, I tried a product, which I'm not going to say the name. I try not to say names of products that don't work, but I had a product that you put on top of your corn. It was like a flavoring or a scent. Mm-hmm. And at one property I did it, and the deer went freaking nuts over it. They just annihilated that corn. Put it at my other property, and I had 2 piles of corn side by side, which I'm not really usually into the corn pile thing, but it was kind of a test run. Mm-hmm. I put 2 piles of corn side by side. One I put the coating on, one I did not, and the deer never touched the corn with the coating. In fact, I got no pictures of deer for 2 weeks. And then I finally got pictures of deer on the other pile, and I ended up having to dig up and haul out that pile with the coating on it.
Wow.
But like a similar thing, you know, it just happened. I think it also has to do with your deer. Your deer kind of act different. You know what I mean?
100%. 110%. You know, what you were going with along those lines is, you know, you add something new to the environment. You know, those deer are very in touch with, you know, their environment and where they live. And you add a new substance or something that throws them off, you know, that can push deer out of that area entirely. You know, they act a certain way if you go there and change, you know, something major in their habitat.
Right. You know, I one thing this year, I was talking to another guy, or listening to another podcast, actually, of a guy talking about how he's against people like specifically leaving a property for deer hunting. Like, he's like, if I own a property, I want to go in the summertime and go on hikes, and I want to take my kids out riding four wheelers, and I want to do this and I want to do that. And everybody's telling me like, oh no, it's your deer property. You don't want a squirrel hunt. You don't want to this, that, and the other. Well, he's like, I started seeing more deer when I just kept, while I was hunting, when I just used my property as normal. And this year, we've spent more time managing our hunting property, whether that's mowing trails, and we went down and sprayed all the broadleaf out of our trails, and which that stuff stinks. We went down and, you know, checked stands, checked cameras, went down there and mowed, and we were down there like basically every weekend all summer, and I've seen like more steady deer pictures this year. Now, it was a little slow to start seeing deer, but
used to your presence there.
I have patternable deer this year already. Yes. And last weekend, Graham got back on our property. And last weekend, we went down to hang his stand.
Oh, good deal. He's back.
He's back. New owner said, you know what? He's good to go. So last weekend, we went and put up his new stand in his old tree. And while we were setting the stand, we were just talking and trimming trees and carrying on. And I got a notification from my spy point, and I got a picture of a doe like a foot from my camera staring into it from the other side of the property. And I thought, I know we were maybe 200 yards through the woods away from that camera. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I know that deer knows we're here, but it was funny. Like she was staring into the camera like, hey, I hear you over there. But like it didn't have any effect. Like where normally if we were in there hunting, making noise, you blow the whole property out, but they've gotten used to, hey, there's noise down here. There's people talking, there's engines, there's weird smells, there's weird stuff, but nobody's getting hurt. And they're starting to like, okay, well, fine. And I think that's going to make a big difference this year on our hunting property. And we also proved that the year they logged the property, we saw more deer. Mm-hmm. And then, so when we started used to in this property, we parked across the street and then we would get on our four wheelers and we have to four wheel around this, the old house. Cause there was a family member that lived there. So we had a four wheel around the old house and then all the way to the back of the woods. And then we dispersed to our stands. Well, when we got that house as our like cabin, which is a freaking dump, I mean, the roof's falling in, like we don't even go in it anymore. It's so bad. But, we started just walking back in the woods. And we noticed that year that the deer were more skittish by us walking in than they were when we rode the four-wheelers back.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've gone back and forth on, you know, stay out of spots, you know, 2 months before season starts. And, you know, there's also times where I'm running late. Like this year, we're running way late. We took over as the president of the lease, and that was a whole fiasco in and of itself. And, but you know, I've got guys hanging stands this week, but we're all seeing deer all over the place and they're just getting comfortable with us being there. They go, okay, you know, there's noises from this area. Like you said, there's noises, there's motors, no one's getting hurt. So,
right. You know, why run?
Play, yeah, exactly. Why run? Play, you know, play game as normal.
And I think there's something to that.
I agree. You know, especially those first 3-4 weeks of season, I think there's a huge, you know, push and pull with, you know, keeping a little bit of human presence on that property year round.
Right.
Where if you don't go on that property for, you know, 6 months, or you're only going once every 2 months to change batteries, you know, now all of a sudden hunting season rolls around, you're there 3-4 times a week if you're lucky. Now the deer are going, okay, something's different here. You know, we're going to avoid this area at certain times of day.
Well, and those deer aren't stupid. They know we're there.
No.
And that's where, absolutely. Like, I also think it adds an element of surprise when we do go in there and we're quiet and calm. It's like their senses are a little less extreme. You know what I mean? They know we are there. Or no, we have been there, but I feel like when we sneak in after we've been running four wheelers and stuff around there, it kind of, it adds a little bit of sneakiness to it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you gotta tiptoe in there every once in a while.
Oh, absolutely.
Switch it up on them.
You know, I, 1 year just to prove a point, I had a guy hounding me. He's like, I can't believe you drive your four wheeler in the woods while you're hunting. I can't believe that. I can't believe that. I shot one of my biggest deer. I drove my four wheeler all the way to my stand.
Mm-hmm.
and I climbed up my stand. And when I shot my deer, my bullet, my shell casing came out of my gun and landed in the bed of the four-wheeler.
Absolutely.
And I was like, yeah, take that. I honestly, I've always said a four-wheeler is a fantastic decoy because they don't know, they know it's not a human. They're afraid of humans. And they see that four-wheeler, they don't know what the heck it is. They just stare at it.
They're curious.
Yeah, yeah, right.
They stare at it. They'll take, a lot of times they'll walk close to it and go, all right.
We used to jump deer up at our four-wheeler every time when we'd walk out. Me and Dad would walk out together, get to the four-wheeler, and deer would jump up and take off. And it's like, what? So
that happened a lot of times when I was living in Indiana hunting there. I was hunting, you know, a mile back into public, and I would come walking out at the end of the hunt and get 30 yards from my truck, and I'd jump a deer right there on the road right next to my truck. Right. I'm like, why did I just walk a mile?
Yep.
And they're sitting right here next to the truck.
See, sometimes there's something there. Mm-hmm. I actually was listening to a show the other day, and a guy was talking. He was a guest on one of the podcasts I was listening to, and he said he does not walk to or from his stand. And everybody on his property either drives the four-wheeler or is dropped off at their stand with a four-wheeler, and they are picked up at the end of the night. And he said, yes, it makes noise. But he said, the deer will watch us drive by. If you stop, they'll take off. He's like, the deer will watch us drive by. And he said, and we don't spread our scent, human scent, anywhere.
Correct.
I'm like, you know, correct. I said, things are coming around. I've had these theories for a long time. And, man, I feel like 10 years ago, people were like, oh, God, for a four-wheeler? No. Right. The deer will be going for miles.
The main gate.
Yeah.
No, and a lot of my members, they drive right to the base of their stand. And a lot of guys that hunt in Florida drive right to the base of their stand.
Well, that's because so they have air conditioning.
they don't want to run into a black bear.
That's true. I never really thought about that.
There's a lot of bears in this state, and people don't think about it because, like you said earlier, you think of Florida, you think of sandy beaches.
Right.
You know, our FWC, which is our Florida Fish and Wildlife, they have 5.2 million acres of management area and forest in this state alone. So you think about it, there's a lot of room for predators to hide, and black bears is our most predominant predator in the state. They actually opened a season for them 3 or 4 years ago now. And, just a limited draw hunt. It was 315 tags. Took a day and a half to fill them.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's insane.
For 315 black bear tags, took a day and a half.
Wow.
And that's not night hunting. That's strictly, it's just like deer hunting, 30 minutes before daylight to 30 minutes after sunset.
Jeez. That's what I heard, a lot of people bear hunting at nighttime. In other states, but I've never.
Right.
To be honest with you, I don't really have any desire to bear hunt.
I don't either. I've seen two or three of them on our property, and I'm like, okay, you go that way, I'm going my way, and
you're beautiful, we'll but agree. I respect your distance.
Exactly. We'll agree just to look at each other from a distance.
Here's a question for you. I know you said you had panthers down there. The Florida Panther, obviously, but I think every outdoor podcast has to talk about it. Have you ever seen a black panther?
I have not seen a black panther. I haven't even seen a tan one yet. It is the last big game species that Florida has to offer that I'm waiting to see.
I don't want to see one. Screw that. I remember seeing my first bobcat in Indiana, and I was like, what in the world? I was like, that's a freaking wild cat. Like, what?
That's a wild cat.
That is a wild cat. Now, fortunately, bobcats aren't very big. And I tell people all the time, like, there's more bobcats than we think there is. But now they're not afraid to attack if provoked. But bobcats do not want to be seen by us.
No.
So that's why they do not want to be near humans. They don't. And most wildlife doesn't. But some just have the potential to tear you up if provoked.
100%. And bobcats is one of those species.
And you got a lot of snakes down there, too.
Yes, we do. We have 5 or 6 different types of poisonous snakes in the state. And those are just the ones that are poisonous. Not to mention, you know, rat snakes and pythons and black racers and king snakes and everything else. So that's one thing that
it's pythons that it's for. Pythons that are the big problem down there right now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
People releasing pets and
that's exactly what it is. You know, they're cute and cuddly when they're a foot long, but you keep them for a couple of years and now he's 6 foot long and, you know, people just don't have the resource to take care of them. So they let them go.
Jeez. Have you ever been iguana hunting?
I personally have not, but I know a lot of people that do it and they say it is a lot of fun.
I've seen a bunch of like some videos of people down in the canals and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You get in a little John boat and you float down the canals with a pellet gun, and just shoot them right out of the trees.
That's crazy. There's, you guys got all kinds of crazy stuff going on down there. I feel like
that's Florida. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like you can hunt something all year down there.
Year round, you're able to hunt. And that's one thing with our pigs on private land. We can hunt hogs 365 days a year, 24/7. It doesn't matter. And you can hunt them with whatever you want. Everything from knives and sticks to, you know, 338 Lapuas and Tannerite.
I'm coming to Florida. I've always wanted to try it.
Come on down, buddy.
Yeah. Hey,
we hunt them with 30-06s. And, you know, it sounds a little cruel, but we just head shoot them. There's no tracking. There's no tracking involved. It's very humane. I mean, the animal's expired before he ever even hit the ground.
If deer had a bigger head, I've actually done a headshot on a deer unintentionally one time. Mm-hmm. That's the most humane way to do it with anything. Absolutely. It really is. But deer just have a small head. So, yeah, one of my other dreams, I always wanted to go out to Texas and do a helicopter hog hunt.
Yes, I've seen some videos, and that looks like a blast to do.
Absolutely. But
which Texas is one of those states where it's doable because you have these giant, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40,000 acre ranches.
Oh, yeah.
They're just so vast and
open.
You go around, flush out. Yep. It's so open. And there, you know, we think we have a hog problem. We have nothing compared to Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Those hogs out there are just destroying millions of acres of ag fields a year.
Well, in those videos I see and hear them talk about, they're like, oh, we'll kill 100 hogs a night. I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm. And that's just,
but that's just to maintain. I mean,
that's just to maintain.
Yeah.
A sow hog is fertile at 6 months and she will drop 3 litters a year of piglets. That's going to have anywhere between probably 5 and 12, maybe even 15 piglets inside of that, and she'll drop 3 of those a year.
Yeah, that's a bad deal. I mean, that's worse than rabbits.
Yeah, so you start doing the math, and you got a big number real quick.
Yeah. Now, do you guys eat your wild hogs down there?
Yes, we do. Awesome. You know, the whole gamey flavor. I've had gamey hog, yes, but it's not the animal itself. You know, probably 90% of that is poor meat handling. And I know you've spoke about this.
Absolutely.
You know, you put in all the work, all the time, all the effort, you know, the prep work, shooting a bow, the prep work, hanging the stands, running the cameras, and then you go out, kill an animal, and you just destroy the meat and the way you handle it.
The next step's the crucial point. And I've always, yes. My dad's told me my whole life, he said, we overhandle our deer meat, but I'd put my deer meat up against anybody's because we go above and beyond what's needed.
100%.
And just like, you know, everybody knows a buck in rut is going to have a little twang, but the same thing, handled properly, butchered properly, taken good care of. There's a timeline there. And a good mature buck in rut, it's normally cold enough here. We'll let them hang for 4 or 5 days, you know, let them bleed out. And then
Right.
Butcher them properly. Make sure our meat temp's good. You know, as soon as I kill that deer, get the guts out of it, like, get it cooled down, get it hung up, whatever needed, whatever can be done, do it. And you know, take care of that meat. And like I said, I'm sure that carries right across to hogs. I know people that eat carp. They say the biggest thing, if you want to eat carp, it's how they are treated as soon as they come out of the water.
Them boys eating carp, I applaud them, because I don't know about all that business.
I'd be down to try it, but I you know.
I'll just have to take their word on it.
yeah. But the hogs, but, yeah, that's cool that our, you're using them. I mean, it's a great access to meat.
The good Lord put these animals on this earth for us to, you know, take and, you know, and use and eat and feed our families with. And, they might be a nuisance, but they're still an animal.
Absolutely.
The good Lord still put them here. And, all that is organic protein. And, the gamey ones are the ones that are either run by dogs and caught in traps. You know, we've eaten.
It's stress. Stress at the time of kill.
So much stress on an animal, and you go in there and kill them right away. You know, I always say it's the testosterone, especially in a big boy. All that testosterone's in his blood system that's running through his meat, and you kill him immediately. Well, the testosterone didn't have time. You didn't give him time to relax before you killed him.
Well, it's like a buck and rut. Like the reason a rutting buck has an intense gamey flavor is because, you know, the testosterone flowing through, the hormones flowing through, but they're also running hard. They're
absolutely
maximum output, minimum input.
Absolutely.
Water input, food input's low, and energy output is high. Body temps are high. Stress levels high. That's what it is.
Yeah, and we've eaten those wild hogs, even boar hogs, up to 275 pounds, almost tipping the scale at 300 pounds. And as long as you harvest them in a relaxed state, I can't taste the difference between a 300 pounder and a 30 pounder. And then, like we briefly mentioned, you know, meat handling. You know, if you see a hair on there, take that hair off. You know, get that body cooled down as quick as you possibly can. Get those guts out. And especially here. You
know,
in the summertime, we're shooting our hogs at night, and sometimes it's in the 90s still. You know, you got to get those guts out quick, or you're going to run the chance of spoiling some meat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a whole other aspect down there. I mean, you're talking about middle winter deer season is still not below freezing down there. I mean,
No. To get below freezing, it takes a lot here. Now, don't get me wrong, 40 degrees here is a lot different than 40 degrees up there. I would say it feels colder, but it's still.
Well, that's because you spend all year at 100.
Well, yeah.
But it's just, I mean, there's so much different. Now, are you still planning on hunting in South Carolina this year? Or North Carolina?
Yes,
South Carolina?
South Carolina.
That's right.
Yep, we, Dad got that lease again, so this would be our 30th season, I believe, on that property.
That's awesome.
And it's just a little 76-acre track, but it sets up so perfectly, you know, in between bedding and creek bottom and ag fields that you know, we do very well on that property. We average taking 10 deer a year off that property. The group of six or seven of us that hunt it, we average about 10 deer a year. And Dad went up there the week after opening weekend and killed 176 pound 8-point
this year
that he ended up putting on the wall.
Jeez, already dropping.
Yep. Oh yeah, and see there, it opens a month earlier than it does here. August 15th is opening day of deer season.
That's our opening day of squirrel season here. Mm-hmm. We're still.
That part of South Carolina, there's no archery season. When it opens, it's open. Guns, bows.
Really?
Everything. Oh, yeah.
Now, wild.
They've done a great thing. You know, they opened. When we first started hunting there, we went there because the regulations were so liberal. You know, we were allowed five does a year and unlimited bucks.
Really?
So there were people going and shooting 20 deer a year.
That's nuts.
And finally got the population down to where, you know, they wanted it. And I think you mentioned this last week on your podcast. A big push in those regulations was insurance companies.
Yep.
Because so many people were hitting deer at night. So they pushed DNR to make regulations more liberal. They got the population down, and then they started implementing tagging system for bucks. So now I believe as an out-of-state hunter, I'm allowed to buy 4 buck tags and 4 doe tags.
Which is still crazy.
It's still crazy, but on our buck tags, you get 2 restricted and you get 2 non-restricted. So your non-restricted is any spike or any buck with more than a 5-inch spike on both sides is your unrestricted. And your restricted tags is 4 points on one side or a 12-inch spread.
Huh. Well, that's kind of neat. I know Indiana used to, when my dad was younger, Indiana used to be a buck during bow season and a buck during gun season. You could take 2 bucks. Now it's just the 1 buck, which I'm fine with because it works here. But our population's kind of been hurting, but they've been working on it. And they took away that bonus doe season, which, yep,
I
again,
remember hearing about that last week.
Fine with that, but... You know, it's just those southern states, you know, everybody talks about deer hunting. We're talking about Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, Iowa, Kansas, Texas, Wisconsin, Michigan. I don't ever hear, maybe Kentucky in there occasionally, like, I don't ever hear people talk about whitetail hunting anywhere else. It blows my mind.
Right.
And here you are talking about, you know, you're hardcore whitetail hunting in Florida. How big's your lease in Florida?
So our lease is 3,700 acres. But on that we have 20 members, and that's what a lot of your Florida hunting is. It's larger clubs, you know, large tracts of land, club hunts, things like that. So each member on our property paid $26.50 this year. You're allowed 3 stands, and then your harvest is state regulated. We just run off state regulations for our harvest. In the future, I plan on pushing and adding some more rules about, you know, let's move towards a trophy lease. You know, let's take some of those 4.5-year-old deer and some of those more mature deer. Let those 1.5, 2.5, 3.5-year-old deer live, but just because we took over so close to season, I didn't want to try and push anything like that.
Right. But you got such a large span of land there, you could actually make a big difference.
Correct.
And you're manageable land size down there. But like I said again, nobody talks about it. Nobody talks about whitetail hunting Florida. Everybody just wants to talk about fishing the big ocean down there.
Correct. But I will say, you know, if you can come down here, and especially like public land, if you can come kill a good deer on public land, my hat is off to you, because that is a tough, tough feat to do. But, you know, our deer population right now is about 750,000 in the state, which isn't great. I'd love to see that number up over 1 million, but with the amount of development going on, it's hard for me to think it'll ever cross that number again. Which, I mean, it hurts me as a born Floridian, but it just is what it is.
So according to this, Indiana has a white-tailed deer population of 680,000.
No kidding.
Yeah.
But, I never would have guessed that.
But our state's quite a bit smaller than Florida.
Right.
So Wisconsin is number one on the list. I'm just going to click this right here. But I mean, we're like, I don't remember what the numbers were last month of talking in 2,000 deer a county we're killing every year. But, so actually as of last year, Indiana dropped off the top 10 list, for the Boone and Crockett whitetail states. Kind of surprising. It was Wisconsin.
Some of the deer I've seen in that state.
Yeah, Wisconsin, number one, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Ohio, Kentucky, Missouri, Kansas, and then Texas, Arkansas, and Tennessee. Pretty surprising. Yeah, and I don't ever really hear about anybody hunting out of Tennessee either. And what happened?
No.
What's up with Oklahoma? Oklahoma got split right there, and they don't, like, nobody talks about Oklahoma hunting. And Texas and the state of, what is it, Missouri above it? Just
right.
Or Kansas, sorry. Kansas and Texas just sandwiching Oklahoma. And then they just, crazy. But yeah, I was actually surprised that that number in Indiana.
Yeah, that's, you know, the amount of deer I saw, just, you know, whether it was going spotlight at night with friends or just driving around and seeing, you know, just the number of deer and the quality of deer. You know, you don't see that driving around. Like, right. I saw four deer on my 3-hour drive home the other day and went, well, that's a good day for seeing deer down here.
Right. That's our population says it's dropped 100,000 since 2015.
Wow.
But, you know, when I worked on when we were all in college and I worked on a military base down here on Atterbury, there was one night I was driving out and I counted 57 deer in one field on that military base. Blew my mind. 57. I've never seen that anywhere else in my life.
Then, wow.
Yeah, just in a little hay field, little pasture out there, just munching away.
That's the field we need to be in.
No joke. Guess what? When you go down there for the special draw hunt, that's not an open field to hunt.
Of course not. probably some general sitting out there with his grandkids just letting them pop them off.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Range day.
But, a moving target.
Anyways, a little off topic there. But yeah, this is really the first time I've known you for, well, quite a while now, six years or seven years, maybe longer.
Coming up on 6 or 7 years.
But, we never really talked about Florida hunting. You were always just trying to get the tips and tricks out of me to learn how to hunt here.
Well, and see, figuring out deer up there is completely, cause here it's flat.
Right.
You know, this state was built about as bumpy as a deck of cards. You know, we're pretty slick down here. And then I got to Indiana. I'm like, hills.
Mm-hmm.
I've never figured out deer through hills. And the learning curve was understanding, you know, bedding areas and big timber, you know, like you have down in Yellowwood and places like that.
Right.
I've never experienced it. So yep. That was a huge learning curve for me, was figuring out how those deer moved and patterned and where they were bedding, where they were going. So here it's just thickets.
And you had the advantage over all of us when you lived up here. You were used to 100-degree days. You'd go out on a 60-degree day and walk 3 miles like it was nothing.
Absolutely.
We're like, holy. You were in areas of public ground that none of us ever thought about trying to go to.
Absolutely.
It gets too hot out. And you're like, hot? This is cold. You're out here in a Carhartt.
It's comfy. Yeah, I remember some of those long summer days scouting out there, and it was, you know, for me to do 10 or 15 miles a week scouting was not uncommon when I lived up there.
Yeah, after school.
After school, get done with classes, in between classes and work, run out there for 2 hours, you know, go put in a mile or two, or on a day off, you know, go do 5-6 miles. And a lot of what I was just walking.
Yeah.
Go out and walk and try and find deer and see what they were doing.
And we won't talk about the whole stories of your learning curve, because statute of limitations haven't wore up on some of them, but.
I don't know what you're talking about, bud.
I remember many a nights you came in. Oh yeah, I did that. Now, fortunately, I don't think you actually ever broke any rules, but you would have if you would have killed a deer. I remember many a nights you come into the shop and because I lived down the road from the college. He was from Florida, obviously. So you'd pull into the shop and like, oh, yeah, this, this, and this. And we're like, whoa, dude. Like, no, no, no.
You know, don't tell anyone else that.
Yeah. Oh, those were good times, though. You were, you did all right up here. You did all right.
I saw some good ones. I killed some good meat deer. You know, the biggest deer that I helped, my buddy from down here came up and shot. You know, he killed a bigger deer than I ever did in Indiana.
Yeah, it's still hanging on my wall.
Yeah, I eventually going to get back around to it.
Yeah. Pick it up. Yeah, yeah.
We'll get there.
I've thought about trying to fit. I've still, oh yeah. You got to say, sure. I'm not going to lie to you. That target where I have it set up outside the back of my shop is like on the edge of the corn. So every morning when I come out to the shop, I open up, get the air compressor fired up and get everything going. And I go out to the back and I just walk outside. I got a big, huge sunflower patch I planted this year. So I just go out there and kind of soak in the morning, watch the sunrise finish. And every morning this year, since I put that thing up about 3 weeks ago, I've walked out and went, oh, shoot. Deer. And then it I'm not all the way awake yet, and I see it and it gets me every time. And then last weekend McGee was over here. We did a big grill out, and he was sitting in the chair, and he kind of spun in his lounge chair and looked over, and he about came out of his seat, thought there was a big buck standing out there. So yeah, it's getting used, but I've got it set up too realistic apparently.
Good.
My dog barked at it for a week, and then my son Remy thinks it's just the funniest thing in the world seeing that deer out there.
Good. It's a when's he gonna start climbing up in the stands with you?
Oh, shoot.
He's still got a little bit longer, don't he?
Yeah, he's two and a half this year, but boy, as soon as he can get out there, he's gonna get out there. I had a video of him the other day. He dug through my hunting pack and found every call I own, and he was out there. He was making dove calls with his hands, which just whistling with his mouth. And then he did the hoot owl, and he loved the estrus bleat can. He was having a blast with that, blowing the grunt call. And man, he laughed and carried on. He'd grab the turkey call. I got one of the push button box calls, and he was messing with it. And yeah, he's going to be ate up. Every time we go to my dad's, he drags me into my dad's office. He says, deer, deer, deer. And then he'll look up and he'll go, wow, wow. It's like, yeah, he's already hooked. So I took my daughter squirrel hunting for the first time, and she's already asking, can I go deer hunting this year, Dad? Can I go deer hunting this year? I said, well, probably take you. She's like, well, we need to go get that pink gun we saw over at Honey Creek Tackle. I said, no, I don't think we're quite ready for that. But she's not far off. I killed my first deer when I was 9. She's 5, and I think she could beat me, but we'll see. She can't sit still very long, so I'm thinking this year we're going to head out to the box blind, bring the buddy heater and the tablet, and when she finally loses interest, I'll let her know that I brought that with us, so because I don't want to push her too hard, but I also want to get my hunt in, you know what I mean?
No, I fully understand it. But, you know, our dads did it for us years and years ago, and now it sounds like you're starting a cycle all over again.
I hope so. And I was talking to my dad the other day, and he's like, you know what? He's like, I'm finally at the age where he's like, I get just as much excitement out of you guys killing deer. He's like, talking to me and Graham. And he's like, when my grandkids are old enough to start hunting, he's like, I won't care if I ever kill another deer. He said, I'll just get sit back and watch what I created and watch what I done and and just be the mentor. And he's like, and just so you know, I'll be 100% okay with it. I said, well, now don't give up hunting now, Pops. But he's like, seriously, he's like, I've killed hundreds of deer. He's like, I can't even, because I lost count years ago. He's like, I've killed my fair share deer of all shapes and sizes. He's like, I'm totally cool. He's like, if I'd never killed another deer, but I got to watch my grandkids hunt, he's like, I'm all down with it.
Good. Yeah.
So
sounds like they need to get out there and get working, but
I've got, I mean, I've got to lay the hammer down the next couple of years so I can get my, my fix in before I start taking them. I started kids a little younger than Dad did.
Yeah, that is true.
I was Dad was 30-something, 35 when I was born. My daughter was born when I was 22, so a few years ahead of him.
Yeah, you're a little bit of a head start. The fishing, what are y'all, just chasing crappie and bass?
Do what? You cut out there.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, you're
y'all
good.
Y'all jumped off the couch. So what are y'all, just chasing crappie and bass around?
Man, I didn't have a great year fishing. I really didn't do a lot of fishing. I did more fishing for fun this year than I did tournament fishing. And I don't know. I didn't get out a lot. It was hot and trying, you know, self-employed now, trying to really put in the time here, but deer season's coming up and I'm telling you right now, I ain't missing my deer season. So
no. See, the fishing, I told my captain now, I said, hey, so if we got a fish, that's fine. I understand that's work, but any free weekend we got, I'm not going to be here. I said, just no.
Are you still fishing during the week?
We, as of right now, we're not. They closed a lot of our seasons down on us, and we just went in the yard for a little while. So, you know, we probably haven't fished in 3-4 weeks or so. But before then, we were usually fishing about twice a week. And then now it's a lot of prep work getting ready for the big trip.
What's the big trip?
We are going to Costa Rica.
Oh, I guess you could tell people too, what you're talking about fishing. You let people know that you fish for a career.
Yes. So, I'm a first mate on a private sport fishing boat and, you know, we travel all over the place, everywhere from, I just spilled the beans on it, but Costa Rica to Mexico to the Bahamas to North Carolina, stationed out of Sarasota, and wherever my boss wants to go, we go. And we chase everything from small little groupers that weigh, you know, groupers and snappers that weigh a pound to 5 pounds to blue marlin that weigh over 1,000.
That's crazy.
And that's what I do for them. And, you know, a lot of what I do is, you know, cleaning and polishing and entertaining, you know, keeping the boat pretty. But on the other side of that, it's fishing. You know, you put in the work, the labor of cleaning for the reward of fishing. And, I've told my boss, I said, when that boat leaves the dock, I don't look at it as work. You know, you guys aren't paying me for that. I'm out here having fun just like the next guy. You know, and kind of similar on the same foot as your dad, I've caught so many fish in my life that, yeah, I still like to bend a rod every once in a while, but seeing someone's eyes light up when that, you know, that big sailfish or blue marlin comes up jumping and you know, witnessing them experience that for the first time, I love that. I get more enjoyment out of that than I will out of, you know, me on the rod, and I love it.
So you just have the dream job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My
your my office is awesome.
Yeah. My office is, you know, a 63-foot sport fishing boat, and that office could be in the mountains of on the coast of Costa Rica looking at mountains, or it could be in, you know, North Carolina looking at beautiful marshland. It all just depends on where we want to go and what we want to do.
And now, do you drive the boat on the ocean to those places?
If we go to North Carolina, Bahamas, Mexico, we take her on our own bottom. So we'll drive her. But Costa Rica, we're actually going to ship the boat.
Interesting.
So we're going to put our ship on a ship.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And what they'll do, they take this big giant cradle. We'll drive into the cradle, they'll pick it up, and they already have a frame built out. They drop her into that frame, strap her down, and they'll do that with 23 other boats. And we pick her up 10 days later in Golfito. which is on the west coast of Panama.
Wow. So if you drive the boat to, like, say, Mexico, how long does that take?
A day.
All day? Just
yeah.
How fast does that boat go?
We cruise at 32 knots, which is 35 miles an hour. Our top speed is 46 knots, which is 50 miles an hour.
Dang. That's moving. So
that's moving, especially when you think the boat weighs 100,000 pounds.
Right. Wow.
And, yeah, it's, we have 3,600 horsepower between the two motors. And, that's tuned down. We got them tuned down for longevity. If we really wanted to tune her up and let her run hard, we could probably get 55, 56 miles an hour out of her.
And how big do you say it was?
63 foot long.
Whew.
Yep. She's 63 foot and she's 19 and a half foot wide. We added an extra foot so we can get between the turbos.
19 and a half foot wide.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's a ship.
She is a doozy, and it's amazing. Some of these other sport fishers, you know, when we were in Mexico last year, there was a 92 foot sport fisher that made ours look like a bass boat.
Jeez. What's a boat like that cost, you think?
That 92 was probably in the range of 10 to 15 million.
Jeez. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. That's a heck of a, I thought a bass boat was expensive. 80K fully loaded.
No. And that's
he said,
for,
no.
No. And that's for a semi-custom boat. That's not, you know, a creme de la creme of custom boats like a Bayless or a Spencer, which are some of the bigger names in sport fisher. This boat was only semi-custom, so you can only, there's an extent of things that you can get done to it. You know, for a 92 Spencer or Bayless, you're probably looking closer to 20.
20 million.
Million.
Whew. I guess I'll
put,
I guess I won't dream of that life anymore.
No, it's cool to be able to see, but I don't ever plan on owning one.
That's crazy. Wow. So you're just all around. That's what you do, man. Living the outdoors. Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about. I need to get you on more often. That's what the hunting game's all about.
Absolutely. You know, when I'm not fishing, I'm hunting. When I'm not hunting, I'm fishing. And, I mean, that's it. That's what my life revolves around.
Now I see why you moved back to Florida.
Yeah, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
I don't blame you at all.
No, you know, I get to spend a lot of time with my mom. You know, my mom's gotten huge into hunting in the last 5 or 6 years, you know, since all the kids got out of the house. And, I mean, she's eat up with it. She's doing all-day sits during deer season, turkey season, and everything else. And she's... It always makes me laugh. She thinks deer can smell sandwiches too much. So she won't take a sandwich to the stand. She'll boil potatoes the night before and eat cold, unsalted potatoes in the tree stand.
That's because hardcore.
Because that gives off the least amount of scent.
That's hardcore. You tell your mom she is hardcore.
And me and Dad are just like, nah, we got to come out and get lunch or something.
I'm not giving up my ham sandwich in the tree.
No. But, I mean, but it pays off for her. You know, she's killed the biggest deer in the family. She's killed the biggest turkey in the family. She is a wildlife slaying machine. And, but I mean, I credit it to how long she stays in the stand.
There's a lot to say about it. I've claimed that for a long time. Me and Dad killed way mm-hmm. more deer when we sat. When I was growing up, me and Dad, from the opening of season till the end of season, sat daylight till dark every day.
Oof. Oof.
Every day we hunted, daylight to dark. Every time.
Those make for some long days.
Boy, especially those early season days. They mm-hmm. just, yeah.
And especially that, you know, even early season in Indiana, October 1.
That's good.
It can still get into the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
If it wanted to.
Well, this last couple of years, there's been a couple of days we've hunted shirtless before. Not like all day, but there's been part of the day you're just sweating. Take your shirt off, hang your shirt up in the tree, and spray it down with some scent killer, mm-hmm. and let it air dry before you put it back on. It gets hot. And then a couple years ago, there's a picture. I've got a picture of me and Dad walking in on the second weekend of bow with a dusting of snow on the ground. So you just never know.
Yeah, you never know with that. At least in Florida, it's consistent. It's just hot.
Yeah, just hot all year.
It's hot. Yeah, it's just hot. You're going to get rained on a little bit, and it's hot.
There's no sneaking
on dusting the snow in May and things like that.
Right, right. Well, Gator, I had a freaking blast. It seems like we did not even cover everything we wanted to cover. So
just the tip of the iceberg.
We'll have to have you back more regular. So I had a great time. Like I said, which you know, you listen to every episode. So we like to end with a Bible verse every week. And this Bible verse, I was just getting on there doing Bible verse of the day, and three different sites had this same Bible verse. So I guess that's the one we need to read today. So this one comes from 1 John. It's 1 John 4:16, and it says that we know and rely on the love of God. We know and rely on the love God has for us. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God, and God in him. Bingo.
That's a beautiful verse. I like that.
It is. It's powerful. I've had a motto lately, especially being self-employed and dealing with some customers that are not great times to deal with. I say, you know what? I'm having a hard day. I just take a seat for a little bit, give it to the man upstairs. Say, here, buddy. You're stronger than I am. Take this from me, because there's a lot of times I just don't know how to handle it. And I think, you know, like that, the biggest thing I always stand behind when I get in the tree, man, is I start my day, especially that half hour before the sun comes up, to spend a little time talking with the man upstairs, talking to God and giving it to him. So that Bible verse kind of, you know, the way I read it, it's like, you know, love the people around you. And I say that at the end of every episode. I say we love every single one of you guys. Like everybody out here listening to the show, we love you. And that's coming from God and from our hearts, because when you love, God lives in you, and that's big time. So
absolutely.
And for anybody listening, if you're just starting out, you know, you're just meeting God, or you haven't yet and you question it, feel free to shoot us an email, because I'd love to talk to you. You know, I see it every day. I see the man every day. I talk to him every day, and I'm a big believer. And that doesn't mean I go to church every Sunday. That doesn't mean I'm perfect. That doesn't mean I don't make mistakes. Let that be very clear. So if you're new in it, I know I've heard from a couple people say, you know, I'm new in with my faith, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to feel overwhelmed. Like, hey, dude, just live it. You don't have to. You don't got to feel overwhelmed, because there ain't a single one of us out there that's perfect. So I like to throw that reminder out there. You know, start a relationship. Religion's man-made. You don't have to claim a religion. Just start a relationship. Ain't that right?
That's right. That is absolutely right.
Well, with that being said, let's shut this down for the week. Gator, you stay on the phone after we get done with this, and we'll go from there. So anyways, once again, thank you so much for joining us. I had a blast. Great to talk to you, too. It's been a while. So thanks for being on, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, with that being said, guys, thanks for coming once again. We love each and every one of you. God bless every single one of you. For those of you getting out in the woods this week, next week, the coming weeks, or already out there, be safe, put your harness on, and make sure you're having a good time out there. You know, follow the rules, be a good conservationist, and let's pass it on to the next generation. So live it, love it, and have a good time. Thanks for coming, guys, and we will see you all next week. We're out.